This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. In each episode, we bring you information, insights, and ideas from some of the industry's top thought leaders. Connect with us to help pick the topic and guide the show.
This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals, and this is the, well, it's either the last episode of 2023 or the first of 2024, depending on when you were listening to it. But the whole theme is actually around do less in 2024, or sorry, less is more in 2024, which is kind of a zippy way of saying how to do less better next year. And there's a very specific reason I wanted to do this topic to kind of wrap up this season of the podcast. It's that it's been a grind for the last couple of years. There's been a lot of muddy water flowing into agencies and clients. There's been a lot of complexity in the world of media. There's been a lot of complexity in the world. And I think within that, it's difficult to have mental clarity. It's difficult to retain focus. It's difficult to kind of come in on any given day and figure out what the right kind of set of activities and behaviors should be in order to be successful. I think so many people have become accustomed to kind of coming and surviving the day, being reactive to some extent, playing what's in front of them, which is a good thing sometimes. But as we go into another year, everybody sort of sits down and does their planning, has a bit of a think about the year ahead, what it is they want to take into the year and leave behind. And so I thought it was timely to do that. I've had a pretty cracking 6 months. I've done a lot of travel in this new role, which has been amazing. I've done, I've been to North America, I've been to Fiji, I've been to India, lots around Australia, hoping to go to New Zealand soon, hoping to get back to Canada soon. So I've spent a lot of time sitting alone on a plane, writing stuff in my notes. And today's episode is one of those. I've done very minimal prep and I've just written some bullet points. But I think the big thing for this episode is to really kind of look at it and go, these are my personal four things that I think make sense if you want to do less better next year in 2024. And the one thing I would say from the last 6 months that kind of is relevant to this topic is there are pockets of brilliance around the world in media markets, but the one common theme of every business that's high performance, of every sales leader that's high performance, of every frontline seller that's high performance, is they do the basic stuff really, really well. Okay. In many cases, they only do the basic stuff well and they don't really do too much else. Okay. They just consistently apply the basics. So there's a real theme. It's about getting back to the simple stuff. It's about removing the clutter, removing the distraction. It's about having some kind of tough conversations with yourself, maybe around some entrenched behavior or bad habits. And I'm just really kind of eager to get into this for my own benefit as well, because even I actually every year have to kind of go in and make sure that I sort of hit the control alt delete button and reset before the year ahead. So without any further delay, thank you for listening to the podcast, by the way. Continue to engage with me on LinkedIn. Continue to share the podcast with your friends. We seem to have some amazing growth year on year, which is fantastic. And on behalf of myself, I just want to pass on a sincere thank you to each and every one of you. 4 years of doing this, it's just been an absolute honor to be able to build this podcast for you and to get such amazing feedback from you all. So I really appreciate it. So have a fantastic, hopefully enjoyable Christmas break, and look forward to seeing you all in 2024.
Media Sales Mastery.
Okay, so like usual, I try to keep it pretty simple. Less is more in 2024. What are four things that you can do in 2024 to simplify your focus and to make sure that you're going into the year feeling comfortable and confident that you've got a plan and you're going to be well prepped to contend with any challenge that hits you? The first thing I would say is that you have to audit your output. Okay, that's number one. Audit your output. What do I mean by audit your output? Well, I speak about this a lot, and I think I'm not alone in this opinion, that the modern sales organization, particularly in media, is really not set up to be productive when it comes to selling and revenue generation. I think distractions are completely abound in media sales companies. I think there's always project groups. There's always different product and platform updates. There's always meetings that we have to jump into and hear about the new thing. There's a lot of distraction. And within that, what we find is that there's a lot of time that actually gets sucked out of a media sales professional's day. and a sales leader's day as well. I think sales leaders in particular probably get sucked into more of this stuff than anybody. And the difficult thing is you have to participate in some of it. Some of it you kind of go along willingly. And then there's kind of this gray area as to, like, is this my job? Should I actually be doing this? Or can I push back on this? There's a difficult, balance to kind of find. But it all comes back to just audit what it is that you're actually outputting at the end of a given week. And what I mean by that is, how much of your time are you spending in the pursuit of revenue generation? Okay, it's as simple as that. If there are 40 hours in a week that you're in the office or you're working, how much of that as a percentage is spent in revenue generating activities? It's very difficult for anyone to give a straight answer when they get that question, right? Even when I get that question, I find it difficult and have found it difficult in the past. Here's how you get an indication. You review your calendar. You go back and you look at your calendar over the last 6 or 7 weeks. Have a look at where you've been spending your time. What meetings have you been taking? What activities have you been saying yes to that weren't revenue generating meetings or weren't really sort of aligned to any sort of a strategy or any sort of a priority focus? Have a think back just from your own memory. You know, what does a normal week look like? What's the cadence of a normal week in your life? I think it's also very worthwhile to keep a record. Now, a lot of people say, I'm not just going to document everything I do in a day, Jamie. It's easier than you think to do that, right? The way you do it is you retroactively update your calendar. So at the end of a 1 hour meeting that you didn't plan to have, you just block that out in your calendar. So if it's 1 o'clock and you've just gotten out of a meeting that went for 1 hour, you go back and you update that 1 hour period as being in that meeting and you code what the content of that meeting was. Color code it if you want. This is another one that can be really handy. Use the color coding in your calendar. Is it an internal meeting? Is it a external client facing meeting? Or is it a meeting related to revenue? You'll find really quickly if you start doing that, the data is pretty compelling. You start to get a really interesting visualization of how much of a given week is spent in revenue generation mode. And the next part of this is about digging into the data too, right? So auditing your output isn't necessarily just about looking at the things you are doing that you think are revenue generating. Look, I did 10 meetings last week. Look, we put 4 proposals out last week. Hey, look, we went and took this deck out to market to 20 clients last month. That's all revenue generating activity too. And it's definitely better than nothing, right? Like, I'm not suggesting that at all. But what you need to also do is hold yourself accountable to quality metrics. Of the 20 meetings that you did with that go-to-market deck, what was the outcome, right? What was the tangible result of that? Now, there are going to be times where you have to take things like that out just as a trade marketing exercise, just to raise awareness, potentially to drive some future demand for a new product. But this is really important, is think about specifically what it is that is actually being driven off the back of your activity, okay? And if the vast, vast majority of that, as a leader or as a frontline seller, if the vast majority of that time is not being spent in revenue generation mode, then this is where you need to really quickly pivot, to use that word, and recalibrate before the year ahead. Because what you don't want to do is go into another 12 months where you're sucked into a cycle of busyness, and what you're failing to do is actually land those kind of knockout punches or maximize the revenue opportunity that's available to you, right? So this one I think is really important. Hold yourself accountable. I'm not suggesting it's easy, but I think it's like looking at your expenses or your statement of your credit card, right? So often we just kind of run at a pace and intensity towards a goal that we don't actually spend time to sit back and retrospectively look at where we've been spending our money or our time. So just like looking at your budget or looking where your money's going, look at where your time's been going, audit your output, and make sure that you can identify and remove those low return, time-sucking, non-revenue generating activities as much as possible. Now, I live in the real world. There is no scenario where 100% of your time or even 60, 70% of your time potentially can be spent in the pursuit of revenue, right? I acknowledge that there's a reality of everyone's job and everyone's day, and there's duties that people have to do that they feel are absolutely job critical. It's the discretionary stuff I'm talking about here, okay? It's the stuff where you have control or influence to remove that from your calendar. And I would suggest that there's certain things that you could be a bit cheeky and just stop doing, right? And I know that's controversial, but I always had this kind of analogy I used to use around, you know, there's that muscle memory or there's these sacred cows that people think are really, really important. Sometimes just don't do it. You'd be surprised how little you get chased up for things. Like, and I'm talking specifically about like things like reports, different things like that. So something to consider. Number two, optimize your processes. Optimize your processes, right? Specifically your sales process, you know, your brief to PCR process, your uncovery to pitch to close process, your retention and growth process, whatever it is you have. Every media company has their own version of this. It might be the six-step sales methodology. It might just be that critical path from an initial brief coming into the campaign going live. Really look at your process, okay? Unpack it. Where is the drag, right? Where are the things that slow the team down? Where are the things that result in too much internal friction or negotiation? Where's the duplication of work? Where are they double handling stuff that they don't need to? Where's time being lost? Where are we not moving quick enough from step A to step B in a process? Why are we not moving with urgency? Really sit down and just look at the process through the context of going into a year next year where there is going to be some very ambitious revenue targets. There's going to be some challenging market conditions, and you might potentially be dealing in a scenario where you've got less headcount in your sales team to do the job that your team needs to do. Where are those little one percenters, right? And don't be afraid to get really finicky with this, because there are definitely some really obvious things that you're going to uncover when you start doing this. And I'll give you an example of something, right? There was a process that I had in a previous company where we would do a thing called the learning report. It was part of our forecasting. To some extent, it was part of the brief to pitch process, because there would be a step where you would have to go back and review the learning report for any sort of lost business that you have from a particular client before you go and do the next brief. Really valuable report, right? You can imagine the kind of rich insight that you might have in that report. I'm about to go and put a proposal to this client. I need this price. I need this level of integration. I need to do these three things in order to secure the business, because as per the learning report from 4 months ago, you know, it said these were the reasons we lost the business. Great idea. Guess what? Nobody was using it. Okay. Every rep in the company was filling it out every week diligently. Nobody was actually using the report for any actionable insight or to do anything around making the sales team more efficient or governing the sales strategy or refining the product or anything like that. So we made a decision to get rid of the report. We just stopped doing it, right? En masse, the entire national sales organization stopped doing one of three mandatory reports they do every week. Now, when you're talking about 500 people, circa 500 people, may have been bigger, 500 people spending 20 minutes every week to do this report, then you stop them doing that and you give that 20 minutes back, it doesn't seem like a massive material impact. But when you actually extrapolate that out over a month, over a quarter, over a year, you can start to see how quickly that 20 minutes does accumulate into actually a pretty meaningful number of time that you've given back to your sales force. It's about finding those little incremental things that you can actually get rid of, you can remove, you can optimize. Where is that stupid kind of duplication of work happening? Where's the double handling? If a rep 9 times out of 10 is going to build a particular schedule on an Excel in this format, do they build it from scratch every time? Or is there a set template that's already pre-built for them? Do they have an air check, if you're in radio, do they have an air check of what a traffic sponsorship sounds like embedded into the one pager on the PowerPoint that they've got to put in their proposal? Or do they have to go and pull it off the logger? These little things in your process, right? It's a sales enablement type of thing you need to think about. Or if you're a frontline seller, it's about what are the processes that I have and what are the things that I know are these kind of constant little niggles that come up in my process that take time, these little time fees or these little finicky things. How can I identify and optimize those now before I go into next year? And as a leader, this is a big one, as a frontline seller too, when you're optimizing your process, think like a bit of a lazy person, right? And what I mean by that is, what jobs should live somewhere else? What jobs are your team doing that there are actually people in the business who are either accountable, responsible, or able to undertake those duties instead of your sales team, right? And I know that there's a lot of politics that comes into this. There's a bit of territorialism. Nobody likes the idea of you just dumping work. But think about it from the perspective of, if there is a team that are there to support your sales team, it's your responsibility to utilize that team to its absolute full potential. Okay. It's actually not, it's not an ethical thing to not do that. Okay. And I think this is a really important kind of area to really discuss is there's a lot of salespeople who don't delegate. There's a lot of sales leaders who also don't delegate in a macro sense. They don't like collaborating with certain departments. Maybe they don't like interacting with certain other individuals in the company. And so they do everything they can to avoid that person, avoid that department, and try to keep it in-house. You've got to think about how do you take that stuff off your team's plate. And I've had many sales managers over the years where this has been a major, major point of contention with me and them is I, as the sales director, needed them to make sure that they were taking this stuff off their team's plates. And, you know, it's much like getting somebody to delegate, right? It's fundamentally the same skill set. So let's just do a quick rundown of optimize the process because I know that I'm rambling a bit, but it's about identifying where that drag is, where is that duplication or double handling that you can mitigate, where are those unnecessary steps in the process that you can remove, what are some jobs or some tasks or duties that should be living somewhere else with someone else that shouldn't be undertaken by the sales team? And that example of reporting, there are these things that present themselves as being very important, very critical parts of the process or very specific business rules that everybody needs to adhere to because they're so important. Don't be afraid to challenge those things really proactively, okay? Particularly if you're in a scenario where you've got a business or a leadership in your business that has pulled back your headcount, you should go back and negotiate with that as some leverage of you've asked me to reduce my sales headcount. Therefore, we are going to need to optimize our sales process. Therefore, these four mandatory things that the business is requiring of the team, we are going to need to optimize and or remove in order to gain those efficiencies and to make up for the lost headcount or resourcing that we have relinquished. Not saying you just go and say that like that, but you get the point I'm trying to make here, okay? It's really important that your sales process is as hygienic as it possibly can be. And that's a word and a phrase I've always used, a hygienic sales process. It's clean, it's strong, it's robust, it's a first line of defense. It's got to be healthy, okay? There's a lot of connotations around that use of the word hygienic, but as it relates to your sales process, I think it is a really good way of encapsulating what it needs to be. Next one, define your appropriate service levels. Now, this is a really interesting one to talk to people about because the first interpretation is people will assume I'm saying start cutting back on super servicing clients. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying drop the ball. I'm not saying become less service oriented. What I am saying is define the appropriate service levels that you are going to be delivering to your customers. And what you want to do is you want to specifically allocate different levels of service to different tiers of customer. So let me give you an example. And she won't mind me giving this example. It's a rep that I used to have work in a team of mine many years ago. I won't share her name. She'll probably know who she is if she hears this. She was a super service rep. The issue that we had she had, which she was very acutely aware of, she would super service the hell out of the smallest clients in her patch. The client spending the least amount of money would still get the same, if not better, rate discounts, the same, if not better, bonus levels. They would see her just as much as the big accounts would. She would move heaven and earth, bend all the content rules, bend all the business rules, give free production. She would basically treat a client spending $20,000 a year like they were a $2 million client. That's a really, really, really inefficient way to run a sales business. And to be honest, her clients probably didn't need that level of super service. Her clients would have still continued to transact at the same level without all of that stuff as well. So what defining your appropriate service levels is about setting a high standard, setting a competitive market standard, but being really, really realistic about the fact that you have finite time, people, and money, and you've got a certain amount of revenue that you need to generate. You've got a certain amount of time in any given week. You really need to think about what's necessary in terms of your service levels, and where possible, you need to pare stuff back. Okay, you need to do it with a high degree of emotional intelligence. You need to do it very gradually, but it needs to be a bit of a slow creep. But you really need to define what is an appropriate level of service for each of these clients. And where, in fairness, where Am I actually neglecting certain clients? Where are my spread so thin servicing 50 clients that I'm not actually tending to my top 10? So that's a big one. To some extent, it's kind of in the same vein of this whole idea of auditing your output, but defining appropriate service levels and defining what is a competitive service level as it pertains to each of your different tiers of customer, so important in going into next year. And this less is more in 2024 theme. I would actually say less of the kind of fluffy stuff and more about just the brilliant basics. You're going to find that clients actually start to appreciate and demand that more. So it's not about going to the nice lunch or coming to the nice event or seeing the flashy upfront so much as it's about getting them the response on time, making it accurate, making it clear, making sure there's no issues in implementation, making sure the invoice is correct, right? That stuff is good service. And for the most part, that's kind of the baseline of what most customers expect. The other stuff you do on top is great, but it is not necessarily something that they're going to value if you aren't doing the basics right either. And we're whipping through these, which is good. The last one is do the three most important things really well. Again, it's sort of in that strategic kind of universe when I talk like this. Do the three most important things really well. This is this whole premise of less is more, okay? How do you run a good sales team? How do you become a market-leading sales team? How do you write money with less resource in a tighter market with a with a strong competitive set, and you're in a situation where you're spending 50, 60% of your week working on non-revenue related activities? This is how you get clarity around what's really important. You identify the three things that move the dial the most. And I get a lot of pushback when I start saying this because people go, Jamie, the world is not that simple. I've got 13 products to sell. They all have individual budgets. You know, you need to be more practical than this. I'll give you an analogy that I think is the perfect way to sum this up. If I said to you, what are the three most important things that you can do to get yourself healthy? You're going to know exactly what you need to do. You're going to sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. You're going to eat 80% of the time. You're going to eat whole, fresh, nutrient-dense foods. You're going to eat to the 80-20 rule. And you're going to exercise 3 to 5 times a week for 30 minutes. So that's not that hard, right? And we're talking about the human body, which is probably one of the most complex things on the planet. You can still distill it down to the three most important things and doing those three things really well. The same can be said about your sales activities in 2024, right? The best teams do the ordinary things the best. So the three things I would be putting down would be something like this. We are going to do the brilliant basics better than anybody else. That means we are going to nail our brief to pitch workflow, our response times, our email etiquette, all of the things that come with just the basic fundamentals. We're going to do that better than anyone else in the market. We are going to run a clear, consistent quarterly tactic every 3 months. We're going to go out to market every 3 months with one simple message. We're going to take it proactively out to all of our customers, and we're going to ensure that we have a meaningful tactic that we're going to engage with the entire market once every 3 months. And then the other thing is, you know, we're going to have the best proposals. We're going to have the best response to brief in market. You can get a bit more specific. You can get more complexity that sits behind it. But if you go the brilliant basics, a strong quarterly push to market, and the best proposals, it's very simple to then ladder up. Well, what are the specific activities? What are the specific processes? What are the specific behaviors that we have to put behind those three things? And the question would be, if you're not doing something that ladders up to those three things in 2024, I'd really question why you're doing it, okay? So these are the types of things that I think are going to give frontline sellers a bit of an edge next year. And to run these down again, and to give you a massive caveat, I wrote this on a flight back to Brisbane in my phone, and I'm just recording this one on the fly tonight. So apologies, this isn't to my usual semi C plus, B minus kind of standard for prep. But to run these down again, if you want to set yourself up for success in 2024, it's about doing less better. It's about simplicity of focus. Less is more in 2024. Audit your output. Make sure that you know where you're spending your time, and make sure that if you are spending it on the wrong stuff, you correct it. Simple as that. Keep yourself accountable to where you spend your time, just like you keep yourself accountable to where you spend your money. Number two,
optimize your processes, get rid of the drag, get rid of the duplication, get rid of the double handling, trim the fat, delegate the hell out of stuff that shouldn't be sitting with your team, and kill the sacred cows that everybody thinks are super important that actually don't do anything to move the dial at a revenue level. I think that one's pretty simple. Next one, define your appropriate service levels. Identify where you are over-servicing clients and identify where you are under-servicing clients and set some consistent standards based on the individual customer profiles that you are serving. Identify where you need to really put the focus and the energy as opposed to where you just need to do the basics really well, okay? Very much need to be cautious with this one, and you want to make sure that you do it in a way that is strategic and considered, but define your appropriate service levels and define service levels that are realistic and achievable in the context of your business, your resourcing, the marketplace, and your team's energy levels. Do not expect a team of seven to do the work of 10. Okay, your job as a leader is to make sure that you keep your people fresh and that you keep them focused on the priority activities and you hold the business accountable in a scenario where you do need to give that additional resource to get that growth. That's a whole topic all on its own. And then the last one, back to that health analogy, right? Do three things really well, okay? Yes, you could take vitamins and do cold plunges and do saunas and do cryotherapy and do Pilates and do yoga and stretching and blah, blah. The list goes on. There's a lot you could do to be healthy, but the fundamentals of being healthy are sleep, exercise, and diet. Okay. So find out what your sacred three pillars are. Find out what the three big things that are really meaningful to your customers. Find the three things that really move the dial from a revenue perspective in your market and spend the majority of your time talking with yourself, talking with your coordinator, talking with your team, depending on the role you're in, spend the majority of your time focused on those core pillars. If you do those things, my strong conviction is that you're going to have a hell of a lot less anxiety, a hell of a lot more clarity, a hell of a lot better time, and you're going to feel in control of what you actually can influence. Because so much of this job, so much of this industry is about mindset, and it's about controlling what you can and choosing how you respond to certain situations that are beyond your control. So less is more in 2024, guys. The one other thing I would really ask you to do is just continue to listen to the pod, share it with your friends, send me the questions as you have, engage with me on LinkedIn, and I promise from my end that I'm just going to continue to be putting together the best podcast I possibly can for you guys. I just thank you very much for listening. So have an amazing year. And I look forward to reconnecting with you sometime around mid to late January when the first episode of the next season kicks off.